This episode of the Everything Matters podcast is brought to you by BeLegendary.coach, where we transform leaders into legends. Are you a senior leader, entrepreneur, or executive looking to take your leadership to the next level? Are you dealing with things such as imposter syndrome, concerns with whether or not your leadership is lingering long after you've completed FaceTime? Looking for new and innovative ways to connect with your team and to gain buy-in from stakeholders that you deal with on a daily basis? If any of this sounds like something that you're dealing with and you would like to take your leadership to an extraordinary level, your effectiveness to a legendary level, visit BeLegendary.coach. That's www.BeLegendary.coach and schedule your free performance analysis today. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the next episode of the Everything Matters podcast. I'm your host, Bradford Speaks, also founder and CEO of BeLegendary.coach, a performance effectiveness company that works with leaders to help them have extraordinary lives and extraordinary careers. My special guest today is my friend from down under. His name is Michael Haynes. Michael is an executive coach and an expert in the space of marketing. Michael is an executive coach and an absolute expert in the marketing space. His company, Listen, Innovate, Grow, provides marketing consulting services and high-level business services such as marketing strategy and marketing research that help small to mid-sized businesses develop advantageous and effective go-to-market and market positioning, acquisition, and growth strategies. More specifically, Michael seeks to empower SME CEOs with buyer-driven strategies and action plans that drive market affinity and revenue results. Michael has an awesome story to share around his journey and the contributions that he's committed to making to others, his clients, and also to the world. So please join me in welcoming my friend from down under, Michael Haynes, to the Everything Matters podcast. Michael, let's get it popping, friend. Michael, welcome to the Everything Matters podcast, man. Such a great joy and pleasure to have you here with me to talk to me about all the stuff you're doing. You and I connected on LinkedIn several months back and had great conversation. We've had a couple of Zooms together, so it's just been really great getting to know you. And I have a friend now on the other side of the world, down under. So yes, thank you for being here, man.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to, first of all, Michael, just talk about, you know, I love starting the shows out by giving people an idea who the guests are, right? And I am intent on making this show global and bringing people in from all over the world with all different perspectives, all kinds of mindsets, all different cultures, ethnicities, whatever. This is the Everything Matters podcast. I mean, for God's sake, right? So everything matters. Everybody matters. Everything matters. So, you know, it's obviously, we can see that you're a dark-skinned man, a darker-skinned man, a darker hue, right? Yeah. But you live in Australia. Yes, and I know for me, and you shared earlier with me that sometimes a lot of Americans and people in other parts of the world too are like, "What are you doing in Australia?" So I know you have you're of Jamaican descent, and were born and raised in Canada. So talk to us about how that all happened. Now, your parents are from Jamaica. How the heck did it all happen? You end up in freaking Australia.
Sure, Bradford. So I'm Michael Haynes. Born and raised in Toronto, Canada. My parents both were of Jamaican descent. So they left Jamaica in, I guess, the early 60s, went to England. And then like many Jamaicans, they either went to the US or Canada. My parents came to Toronto. So born and raised in the great city of Toronto, Canada. That's where I was born, raised, educated in Canada as well. So I did my undergraduate degree in public administration at Carleton University in Ottawa, the capital. Eventually did my MBA in marketing and international business at Dalhousie University. I've always loved travel. That's been something I've always had a big passion for. And so post finishing my MBA, I had a bit of time before I started my MBA job. And so I came down here for about 6 weeks, traveled around Australia, New Zealand, made some good friends in Melbourne. One of them said, you know, Michael, we have to get you down here, living here. And I've always wanted to live internationally. And in year 2000, just on my 30th birthday, I actually hopped on an Air Canada plane and came across to this side of the world and set up shop, worked at a .com way back then when the .coms were big.
Yeah, I remember that.
I've been here ever since and I feel quite fortunate. As I mentioned in our conversations, Bradford, some of my good friends and my sister call me a citizen of the world because I do love, I love travel. I love living globally. And I consider myself to have two homes, Toronto and Sydney. Sydney is where I am based, but Toronto will forever be my second home. And Star Alliance are always going to have a very good relationship because, yeah, I need to be able to work across both areas with my people. And that's part of the reason why I left big corporate to become an entrepreneur, to have that flexibility and control to work with who I want, how I want, when I want. So that's kind of a few things in a nutshell. So I hope that gives a bit of insight to crazy Michael Haynes.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. I love that you're so free and flexible and, you know, to be, you know, just have such an international mindset, right? There's no limits. There's no boundaries for you. And I love that. It really, to me, is what makes a life rich and fulfilling, right? To have friends all over the world and to be a global citizen, as your siblings say, it's pretty awesome, man. So take me back, Michael, to like growing up in Toronto, like for people who may not really, like I've never visited Canada. Unfortunately,
I know, man.
Shame on me. So, what was it like for you growing up in Toronto, man? What's Toronto like as a kid?
Okay, so I am a very proud Torontonian. Toronto is one of the most multicultural cities in the world. I do live here in Sydney, and people here in Australia think Sydney and Melbourne are quite international. In Toronto, no nation is not represented. You can go to any part of Toronto. There, you know, every nation is well represented in terms of food, shop, culture, entertainment, growing up in public school. I had people in the class with the name Gudarshan, Mumtaz, Ilio from Egypt, Poland, South America, Africa. Bradford, I did not hear of a person named Tom Smith until I came to Australia on my very first trip. And I was traveling and I was sitting in the hotel and the person at hotel, their name was Tom Smith. And I broke out laughing and they asked, why are you laughing? I said, because I've never heard of a person named Tom Smith. Tom Smith was a name I heard on when the teacher did the math problems. Tom Smith is going to the gas station and has to buy, gasoline at, $1.35 for you Americans per gallon. He fills up his car and it takes, 20 gallons. Calculate how much it's going to cost and then add the state tax. That context, I've heard those kinds of names. I never actually met a person with the name Smith. I'm always used to dealing with people with, long, interesting surnames, first names, coming from different parts of the world. So perhaps, Bradford, living in such a multicultural environment in Toronto, that I think partly helped fuel my love of travel. Also living near the airport, so being on the flight path, seeing all the different airlines coming in, with Toronto being a gateway to the world. So seeing the Lufthansa, KLM, British Airways, all the Air Jamaica. And I used to say, one day that's going to be me on one of those planes taking off, going to different parts of the world. And fortunately, I've been able to make that happen so that I'm actually, I'm living, living part of my dreams, some of my aspirations.
Yes, you are, man. You're living out your childhood dreams. And I've heard about Toronto before. I've heard that Toronto on that side is very much like New York. And you mentioned the multicultural aspect of it. Yes. I hear that it's a pretty fast city. There's always something to do. It doesn't sleep a whole lot. It's always moving. It's always popping. So sounds like my kind of city when I was younger. I don't know about now. Maybe now I might go to Vancouver or something.
Vancouver is a great city. It is one of my favorite cities in Canada. But Toronto has a lot to offer across ages and generations. For the younger folk that want to do the nightclub scene and all of that, yes, there's definitely a lot of that. But if you're into culture, you want to do fine dining, cafes, you're into literature, you want to go read books, go to talk. All of those things from a business perspective, lots of great conferences. It's an innovation hub as well. So it's great from a business standpoint. So there's something there for everyone.
It's great to know.
So there's something there for everyone. It's a fantastic thing.
It's good to know. Good to know. And Michael, now, just kind of transitioning here, you've had a, a pretty fascinating career, I would say. And you went to school, you got your bachelor's degree, you got your MBA, right? And it sounds like, and just, kind of walk us through that. After you got your MBA, did you go and start working as an independent consultant right away? Or did you kind of work the corporate world for a while and then went into? So walk us through that whole process.
Sure. So once I finished my MBA, which I finished back way back in 97, showing my age at Dalhousie, I had about a short break of about a couple of months, and then I started my first job in corporate, working as a business analyst on a pricing strategy team at a large corporate called Canadian Tire, then moved to work at Kraft Foods as a marketing information manager. And it's in that role I really started to learn about how to be insight-driven and how do you utilize the understanding of your markets, industries, and customers to help drive business strategy. So that was a fundamental role. Had that itch to live and work overseas. So within pretty much the second day after I'd started at Kraft Foods, I'd already applied for permanent residency to go live in Australia. So I stayed at Kraft for a short time, basically a year. Then in 2000, hopped on a plane, came to Australia, was working at a dot-com as a marketing strategist for a dot-com company for about 11 months. Like many dot-coms back in 2000, this one went bust. And so then I ended up back in big corporate, worked in various corporate roles in some of the big retail banks, financial services, worked at one of the big telecommunication companies here in Australia, Telstra Corporation, as their head of customer research and analysis. And that's where I really got into the business-to-business, the B2B space of things. So really honing my skills around strategy, marketing, innovation. And so I did that role for about 5 years, worked really hard, learned and led at the same time on some pretty big projects. Then in 2010, it came to that point where did I want to go into their top talent program to become an executive or did I want to do something else? So in 2010, turned 40, took 6 months off, went to South America, volunteered, learned Spanish, worked at an after-school program in an indigenous community in Peru, came back January 2011, and then that's when I set up shop as an independent consultant under my original business name of 2XL. 2XL being the two things you need to be excellent at, understanding and responding to customer needs. Because my whole premise is about being customer-driven, and in B2B, we need to be buyer-driven. That is the key to success. I started from 20. So it's from that 2011 point on, I was working as an independent consultant, working primarily with small and medium businesses, also still doing some subcontracting to larger organizations all around business growth strategies and how do you leverage strategic marketing, business innovation, and how you work cross-functionally across companies to drive that business growth and meet those objectives.
Yeah, really great, man. I mean, a very, very extensive and interesting, intricate career. You've done quite a few things. You sound like you're a data guy. You like to connect the dots. I mean, let's look over here. Let's see. Okay, how can we take this and implement a strategy based on what we're seeing, what the customers are saying, what the business needs are, and things like that, which is, you're right, it's what makes businesses go.
And hitting the nail on the head. It is about being insight-driven, connecting the dots and pulling different forms of insights that you'll get from the market, from within your company, from your competitors, new technology, and putting all those things together to say, so what? What does that mean for the business? And what do you need to do next? And how do you do this leveraging all parts of your organization, all the different functional groups, because they all have to work in tandem to meet those objectives. So you're exactly right there.
Absolutely. And I know you had this passion for B&B and B2B, and I want to get into that. I've got a little bit of experience in B2B myself. But I wanted to ask you this one question. It's kind of a personal curiosity that I have. I do coaching with a social media company. And how do you see in the work that you do, how do you see social media? Because, you know, everything is shifted, right? With the onset of social media, like literally the selling is actually happening on social media, right? Selling is literally taking place on social media. Maybe not so much B2B, but there is some of that there. But B2C, for sure, there's ads everywhere, right? There's a ton of ad revenue that Facebook and Instagram and these places like this are generating, even LinkedIn, tons of revenue, billions of dollars in ad revenue. So how do you see social media from a customer-centric perspective, you know, and really targeting what the customer's saying, what they're looking for? What role do you see that playing into what you do?
Okay, so I'm going to be talking about social media from a B2B perspective because that's my lane, that's my jam. And so social media is very important because, yes, the world is going digital. How your business-to-business customers, the B2B buyer, how those decision-makers buy now has changed fundamentally. So the way of selling in B2B has changed a lot now. And that we could have a whole other podcast discussion around that.
Right.
Buyers want to buy from, they don't want to be sold to. And so there are big implications. But your social media serves as a great place for how you're going to engage with, engage, not sell, how you're going to engage and really, truly connect and be connecting on a really authentic, meaningful way with those decision makers, strategic partners that you want to be working with. So that's where the role where that can play. So social media has a great role to do so, but it's not just about providing content, it's providing opportunity for engagement, which you can leverage both within social media platforms itself or using social media to drive folks to have other opportunities to engage with them on a more meaningful level, such as roundtables, masterminds, workshops, co-creation. Me, Bradford, social media, LinkedIn in particular, has been phenomenal, particularly over these past 3 years. We're here in Australia. We were in lockdown. Borders were shut, so couldn't go nowhere. So me and Air Canada did not have a very good relationship with Airlines. We had a divorce for 3 years.
I'm
in that relationship. And so all my interactions were through the likes of Zoom, Google Meets, particularly Zoom. And it's how I've made a number of connections. You and I have met because of Jarrett Thomas. You interviewed him. Jarrett and I got connected through LinkedIn in the height of all the mayhem. A lot of my new business colleagues and people that I'm now collaborating and working with, it all started solely through online. These are people that I haven't even met yet who I'm going to be meeting when I come up to Canada and the US later in the year. So social media plays a significant role in B2B, and it's a very important role, but we have to realize it's around providing insights, engagement, and connection. It's not about selling, because the whole world of B2B selling now has changed because no one wants to be sold to, people want to be buying from. And there's been a lot of studies to talk about that. And I can unpack at another point in time, but social media is very important in B2B. And LinkedIn is critical and can serve the right role, but it's around that engagement, connection, insight, and bringing all three of those together now. And we have to do it in a new way because buyers now do a lot of their own things, how they interact, how they do research. And so it's fundamentally changed the game now.
Totally agree with you. And you know, one thing that we know that doesn't change about selling something is that we know that buying is an emotional decision. And it speaks right into what you're talking about. When you're engaging with people, when you're connecting with people in a unique and authentic way, and can drive them to maybe another way of engaging with your brand and with your business, right? Your product or service. Now you're starting to create and you're starting to really nourish and nurture an emotional relationship, which primes that buyer to be ready to buy at some point, right? They may not buy today. But as you continue to get more familiar with your, they get to be more familiar with your brand. They begin to trust your brand, watching your brand, monitoring what you're doing. At some point, you're hoping that turns into a sale. So that's really brilliant that you created that. And I love the way you brought it all together in regards to how that equates to business growth, revenue generation, et cetera. Love it.
And Bradford, you have summed that up really quite well, because that is the new way of selling. B2B presents massive opportunities for us as small and medium business owners. I'm very passionate about empowering us, our fellow people, to succeed. But you have to have new skills, deeper skills, and the right mindset, as you just articulated. It is a longer term play. It's about building trust. It's about building engagement and connection. And you cannot expect anyone to sign up. You do a webinar and people are going to sign up for your big ticket item. These events, webinars, live stream, the engagement starts a conversation to build trust, but it does take nurturing engagement interaction over time, but it can lead to big, significant opportunities. But it's a different play. It's a longer term play.
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of like dating, right? If you look at it, it's kind of like dating. Like you start dating a brand, that brand starts dating you, and you don't get married right away. No. You take your time, you get a chance to know it, go out on a few dates, right? I like you, you like me. Hey, maybe we can do a little something. Maybe we can make this a thing, right? So I like that, man. So I want to talk about one of the things that you also did, Michael, is that you know, becoming an entrepreneur. And I said I wanted to touch on this. Is you focus primarily on small and medium sized business, and I want you to talk about why you chose that particular vertical, why you chose that particular area, and talk to us about that. Like what attracted you to that particular area?
Okay, a great question, Bradford. I guess there's a number of reasons why I focus on small and medium businesses that operate in the business-to-business space, and I focus with service-based businesses. So if you're selling a product, parts, you're building a thing, that's not my lane or jam. I'm all about working with service companies. So if you're a architect, lawyer, engineer, cybersecurity company, you repair cars and motor coaches, services, that's my lane. Why do I work in this space? I think it's a combination of things, Bradford. One, from my big corporate experience, it has always been working in terms of helping organizations to be market customer driven in how you deliver services. Mm-hmm. So I've developed, I guess, a fair bit of expertise and experience working with companies in doing so. Also, I think it's also part of family background as well. I do come from a family of entrepreneurs. So my sister has her own law practice in Canada, and she works in employment law. My cousin, Erica, has her own business doing, renovating homes and providing services to help folks do that. Her husband has his own construction business. So I'm coming from a family of entrepreneurs that are SME service-based driven. And I've just found from my interactions, Bradford, working with SMEs are very much my people, can relate to them. They've got a similar mindset. And I'm really passionate about working with purposeful, growth-oriented entrepreneurs who are looking to build and grow and take their businesses forward. And so lots of opportunities for small, medium businesses who really do great things working in the big end of town, and they aspire to get into those mid-market, large corporate organizations for which the business owners are really quite keen to be working with really good businesses and organizations that can really deliver. The days of no one gets fired for hiring IBM, those days are over now. A lot of big business leaders recognize that, these SMEs, these folks have the expertise, they have the hunger, the quality and service delivery, but you have to know how to navigate that world of B2B. How do business decisions are made in larger organizations? There's knowledge, skills, and preparation that has to be done. But they're very open to it. I got my first project as an independent consultant was working for a global HR company for this chief marketing officer who needed some work done on growth strategy. And she was like, well, I could hire someone from one of the big consulting firms and spend lots of money and get not a lot of delivery in terms of quality, or I can give it to you as an independent consultant and even paying you at your top rate, I will get what I need to deliver. So my first opportunity was doing so. And again, but it's through that understanding of how to navigate, how to deliver to them. There's lots of opportunities for our small and medium business owners to, get the growth impact they seek and to get in that big end of town. But you have to understand the playing field and the rules of the game.
You know, one of the things you also talked about, Michael, is the book that you wrote, right? And you wrote this book. And I just want to touch on what the book was about. And what inspired you to read the book? I'm looking for the title of the book. What was the name of the book again?
So the book is called Listen, Innovate, Grow, which is also the name of my company as well. So Listen, Innovate, Grow, it is, as the subtitle said, it's a guidebook for SMEs, for small, medium businesses, and startups can use it as well, on how they can acquire, retain, and grow those business, those B2B customers. I wrote this book with my colleague and good friend, Gareth Chandler. We wrote this book back in 2018 because we recognize that small and medium businesses, like I said, they're excellent at what they do. There's lots of opportunities for them in the big end of town with your mid-markets, your large corporations, your government. But there are skills that and things they need to know how to deliver to those business clients that they are hoping and seeking to serve. But there was not a lot out in the marketplace. A lot of your B2B books are really written for the big end of town, for your big corporate. And so in terms of how you understand the market, understand your customers, which I call listening, they'll talk about things like segmentation, customer value analysis, all tools and methodologies that small and medium businesses can't afford, don't have the budget for, don't have the time to implement.
Right.
So this is about creating a book that will have strategic, data-driven, insight, market, customer-driven strategies, approaches that any small and medium business can use to hopefully develop that roadmap, that action plan to acquire, retain, grow those business customers, and ultimately grow the business that they're seeking to create and a lot that they want to have as well.
That's great, man. That's great. Yeah, I need to pick up a copy of that book myself to see what's happening in there, man. What you're talking about? You're talking some real good stuff here. So I love the impact that you're making with small and medium businesses. And I don't know what it's like in Australia, but I would imagine it's very similar Well, I know you work with global, you have a global customer base, so you work with people all over the world. Small businesses and medium-sized businesses make up the majority of businesses in general, right? All the revenue and all the service and products that are provided, it's mostly provided by small to medium-sized businesses. Now, you've got these bigger ones, and the thing about it is when you're a small, medium-sized business and you get too big, or not too big, but if you get become profitable, what's going to happen? You know, one of the big boys is going to come along and say, hey, we'll give you $20 million for that. We'll take it. And they take it and they, you know, so that's always a possibility of getting bought out, which is, you know, for the small to medium sized businesses, it's a good deal for them, right? In most cases, but sometimes it may not be a good fit. So how much have you seen of that? Like these small to mid-sized businesses building them and helping them to develop strategies that grow them to a point where they become an attractive little jewel for maybe a larger business to swallow them up.
Great question, Bradford. So with the small, medium businesses that I'm working with, they're looking to grow, they're looking to expand. Acquisition is not really, to be honest, a top of mind for a lot of the business owners that I've been working with. You're quite right. You know, and the challenges that small, medium businesses I see are facing are very common across the globe, across different markets, Australia, Canada, US, the UK. Some of the challenges they are having is that they're looking to grow. But a lot of questions I get is, Michael, how do you identify what are the right growth opportunities for my company? How do I create solutions that business clients are going to want to buy? How do I create solutions that are going to generate recurring revenue? A number of small, medium businesses are looking to go global. So, Michael, what is my go-to-market how do I pick the right kinds of markets and how do I enter those markets? What are the strategies? What are the approaches to be doing so? Mm-hmm. How to innovate? How do business innovate is a big question. A lot of small, medium businesses are looking to do in terms of developing new solutions. So that's around service innovation. Michael, what do we do around marketing? Marketing is a big area that a lot of small, medium businesses are struggling with because quite frankly, I find marketing, I have a love-hate relationship with. I say love-hate relationship because my training in terms of my MBA, all the executive courses I've done at Kellogg, et cetera, are grounded that fall under strategic marketing, which is around business innovation, product development, marketing strategies, customer experience. When talking to practitioners, they get it, but I find marketing, even when you're dealing with MDs, CEOs, whether it's from a small, medium company or large corporate, they think tactics. They think branding, they think advertising. It's about making things look pretty. They're doing a lot of tactics and they're not doing things right. And in B2B, quite honestly, many of them just suck because they're doing the wrong things. LinkedIn has a lot of opportunities for it, but there's too much what I call show up and throw up. Making the pitch. Advertising is great for awareness. It's not how business customers buy. So there's a lot problems there. So there's a number of key challenges in terms of businesses, small, medium businesses looking to grow around some of those areas of how do I, do the right kind of innovation in terms of marketing, creating the right kinds of solutions. How can I leverage things like different kinds of strategic relationships, co-creation, partnerships, etc. So there are a lot of opportunities, but there are a lot of challenges that these are some of the kind of challenges in terms of lacking the right kinds of skills, knowledge, and developing the right kind of action plan that's going to be affordable, strategic, but meaningful, and have those outcomes that small, medium businesses are looking for. So these are some of the kind of trends that are quite common across small, medium businesses. I've observed it through talking with business leaders, but also a lot of the research, because I try to practice what I preach and reading the different reports that have come out from different markets and the different organizations around what are the needs of small, medium businesses. It is very much around how do you drive growth, create the right kinds of products, creating the right kinds of services, how do we innovate, how do we sell in the right kind of way in line with the new B2B buyer. These are some of the big challenges that are really, transcending across the globe with small, medium businesses.
Yeah, man. And I can imagine what you do fills a big gap. Your calendar, I'm sure, stays full. You can probably only take on a couple at a time because these are big pieces that you're talking about. And these are integral components to really making a business go, marketing. I mean, even with my coaching business, it's one of the things that I'm constantly trying to dial in, trying to connect and get the voice of my particular ideal, avatar, my ideal client. Like what kind of language do I need to speak to them and how can I connect with them in a way that actually resonates and lands with them? Right. I mean, it's all important. So having a strategy in place, as you said, and a particular action plans and action items you can put on that you can take on are key to making that happen. You know, Michael, man, you have a ton of knowledge and expertise in this space. And you know, one of the things that I know, you know, in our previous conversations that we have to be responsible for as leaders is making sure that this stuff doesn't go to waste. So I know you're sharing it with a lot of these small to medium sized businesses, helping them to generate revenue and grow themselves to however big they want to be. But man, you got to share this stuff with some other people. So let's talk about the young folks. Like, what are you doing, and how important is it for you to be able to channel some of this knowledge and expertise that you have for future leaders, you know, in the world? So, you know, where do you see that falling into play for your vision?
So for me, Brad, for great question. For me, my whole vision is about empowering, you know, both current small and medium business owners to thrive and succeed through B2B, but also your aspiring leaders to, you know, our young folk, women, people of color. I'm very passionate about these groups, of helping them to build and grow as well. So that's very important. So how do I, you know, reach out to help them? I'm doing so through trying to speak at various forums, through my content, which I'm putting out, through podcasts such as this. Here in Sydney, I've worked with a few organizations, volunteered and done workshops on weekends with the Sydney School of Entrepreneurship. There's the Global Startup School up in Vancouver. I've done some virtual sessions with. So I will be continuing to be doing that and trying to tap into organizations where I can provide some of that free mentorship. So those are some of the ways I'm looking to do so. How I'm looking to seek to serve on a broader scale is I am launching my legacy SME B2B community, because I want to serve our people of SMEs on a broader scale, and setting up a community, a global community, where we can get that interaction, education, insight, and inspiration is something that I'm doing. And so that's one of the key drivers why I'm setting up the legacy SME community. But yeah, I'm very passionate around helping our young people and aspiring entrepreneurs to, you know, have the lives, growth, and impact that they seek. So I'll be continuing to do that volunteering, but I'm also hoping through the community, eventually I'd like to set up some scholarships as well. So these are some of the things I'm currently doing, and some of my vision I have to move forward as well.
Really great, Michael. Really great. You know, I wanted to ask you, I meant to ask this earlier. You know, you being a solopreneur is this new term that we use right now, you know, and, you know, what are if someone wanted to, you know, become a solopreneur, maybe have a couple of partnership or whatever it might be, what are some of the biggest challenges that you have in managing your operation effectively, efficiently? You know, how do you manage your time? Like, what are some of the biggest challenges that you face, and how do you solve those for yourself?
Okay, great question, Bradford. Okay, first of all, yes, I am a solopreneur, so I work for myself, but I do not work by myself. So I do have a virtual team. And my virtual team is, you know, Anna Delaney up in Brisbane. That's my lady that does all my marketing. So she makes all those things happen with, you know, posting my content. I will develop the ideas for the webinars and the programs and stuff. Anna brings it to life and puts it out there in the world. So she's a core part of my team. Shannon Nichol up in Brisbane manages my website to keep it all active and going and doing all those things. I'm not a technical person, so dealing with MailChimp and all that crap, I know my lane, I know my zone of genius, so they're quite important. I have my team. I've got, you know, Dan Rippon is my content guy. So when I create content, he makes sure it's all optimized for SEO. And so I now have visibility, because before working with Dan, I had zero web visitors, zero visibility. Now I've got nice web traffic from all over the world. So you have to have your team. I have my accountant and my lawyer who keep me on the business end of things. I also use a lot of it. I used to use advisors, and I'm a member of a number of groups. So there are various people that I'm working with, Chris Colt, Brian Hilliard. I'm a member of various groups because I need to be learning to be keeping at top of my game, how to evolve and run my business. So to be a solopreneur, you will have to invest to grow. You will have to have your team to help you do run the various parts of your business. You should be part of communities and groups to be learning and developing. And you should be doing mentorship to building your skills as well. And I'm also a believer of, if you're not prepared to invest and pay money and pay significant money to get quality coaching, then why should anyone be paying money to deliver to you? So I would say that's the biggest thing. And that was one of my key learnings. So when I first started off, I tried to do everything myself, and what I couldn't do, I would just kind of ignore it. That's a quick way to waste a lot of time and money, which I did in the first couple of years, to be honest, because it took me, I had to get smart. It's like, no, you can't do, or you suck at, or you don't have the time to do everything. You have to start building your virtual team. And now it's much easier to do, because you can get virtual assistants and so forth, part-time workers, gig economy workers, yeah, who are great at what they do and quite affordable, so that you can get all the components of your business covered in an affordable manner, which is easier now than it was in 2010, 2011, when it was harder to find a fractional person to help you with your marketing, to help you with your social media, to help run your website. Now we've got a lot of these services that are available. So solopreneur, you can work for yourself, but you cannot work by yourself. You will need to have a virtual team, because there's going to be multiple things you either are not good at, and or you don't have time for. And as business owners, we have to do things at a level of excellence. You know, doing a website for fun is very different from doing a website to drive business, to build your brand. It has to be done at a level of excellence, a level of expertise. Now more than ever, because every second person trying to set up their own shop now.
Facts, man. You couldn't have said, that was really brilliantly demonstrated. And it's so true. I mean, even with me, with what I do, I think the first three podcasts I edited and published myself. And I'm like, you know what? First of all, I don't have time to do this. I don't have the expertise. I don't have the knowledge. And I can actually have somebody to do it for me affordably. So all the things you just mentioned are right there and available. So really, if anybody wants to start a business, you know, to your point, you have to invest in yourself. So if you're out there listening to the podcast today, you have to invest in yourself. And this means, you know, and I appreciate you, Michael, for saying that, paying a coach the top dollar. Like, if you want somebody to coach you and develop you, then you pay the money, right? Somebody will invest in you down the line, right?
Yeah.
You invest in yourself, you'll get invested in it as a return. So you have to be willing to do that for yourself. You know, having a team around you, I love the way you put that. You know, you work for yourself and not by yourself. And it's so true. Then my wife was trying to do something the other night. It's funny, with her website. And I was like, honey, I got a lady that did my website for me. She took her a week. She did my whole website for me, and she'll charge you half of what you're about to pay right now to get it done, right? Or and you'll save a lot of time. You could spend your time generating revenue, right? Money making things, and let them handle the technical stuff. You're not a web developer. That's not what you went to school for. You're a healer. And she's like, yeah, you're right. So I turned on to my girl, and she was like, oh my gosh, she did an amazing job. I'm like, yeah. And you save money and time, right? So it's probably one of the biggest things, Michael, and you've been in this space for a minute, and I've been in business for a while too. You know, when you look at how businesses and how we do business has transitioned and changed and morphed over time, I would say that's probably one of the biggest things I've seen. Because as a small, medium-sized business, you don't have to have a brick and mortar at all. You don't have to have people on payroll. I mean, you don't have to carry insurance for anybody anymore. You can have a very effective and profitable business in that, with that framework. So I love the way you created that, man. Really awesome. Really awesome. So I want to sort of move to a different segment of the conversation, Michael. And one of the things I love to ask people, especially people who are successful like you in business, what is it that inspires you? Like, you know, you get up every day. You know, it's morning time over there where you are right now, right, in Australia. You know, you get up every day. What motivates you? What drives you? What makes you tick? What inspires you to get up and go and do what you do for people and serving people on a daily basis?
So, first of all, Bradford, I'm a very self-driven, motivated person. So I have a lot of drive myself. So, and I'm very fortunate I love what I do. Many people look at me like, Michael, you're working. You're always working so hard and you're working crazy hours, but I love what I do because I'm working with who I want to be working with. I'm working with them on the kinds of projects I want to be doing. And I have a vision of what I want to be doing in terms of where I'm taking the business and the impact that I want to seek and who I want to be working with. So that drives me and motivates me every day to get up. And when you get those wins and that feedback from clients or people I'm interacting with on roundtables, workshops, and said they've done X or Y, and Michael, I've now been able to achieve X, or yes, I just got an introduction to that speaking opportunity, what have you. When they get even those small wins and they come back and say, Michael, you helped make that happen, that further inspires me, motivates me. It's like, okay, I think I'm doing the right things. Let me keep on doing what I'm doing. Because you need to have that drive, because not every day is a good day. There are some days, some weeks where you're just like, oh my goodness. It would be so easier to go back to the dark side and work in corporate. You know, and I've had quite a few opportunities come forth to me during the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I can't do it because there's a whole lot of stuff there. I learned a lot from big corporate, don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of ugly things that are not aligned with my values and what I'm looking to achieve that I'm like, no, I'll keep doing what I'm doing, even on the days or weeks that may not be so great. because ultimately, at the end of the day, I can say I love what I do. I'm in a good zone. Yes. So let me just stay there.
Yeah, I dig it, man. I dig it. And I know you also mentioned, Michael, that you had a few people that inspired you. I know your mom was a big part of the work ethic that you have. You know, people say, Michael, you work all the time. Well, you love what you do. And I think that's key to, you know, it's like when you love what you do, it's not even work. It's just like you're just having fun, right? So you said, what role does your mom play? Like, what did you see in her? How does she inspire you watching her do what she did and drive herself to her success?
So my mom, a single mom, my mom passed away in 1994 from ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, mama and I were really close. She's a single mom. But she was always like, education is very important. I'm a big athletics fan and, you know, like to do my sports and stuff. But she's like, education is going to take you far. She always used to say, you've got to face reality. And I always think about that every day. You've got to face reality. So you're going to have to make decisions, do what you need to do. Try your best, work hard, go as far as you can go. So those values have always been instilled in me every day.
Yeah.
You know, mom is in my head, you know.
Yeah.
You have to face reality. Awesome. When I have to make those business decisions, like mom would say, you got to face reality. This is not working, do something else. So my mom is a big role model. I'd have to say my sister, Paulette Haynes, is a big role model. She's been an entrepreneur straight out of law school, and she did a law degree, not an MBA. So she, you know, wrote her business plan from ground zero, and she's worked, she's been independent from day one and has been a great success. So she is a role model as well as someone who's, you know, been doing it for 25 plus years with no formal business training, but has learned and adapted and is operating in the zone where she wants to be. Other people that have motivated, I guess more famous people that have inspired me. Again, I'm a big athletic fan, and I think I mentioned in the pre-notes to you, Gail Devers, who was the two-time champion. I'm a massive fan of Gail Devers. I was a fan of her as an athlete. I'm a fan of her as a person. I love what she represents in terms of tenacity, how to deal with adversity, how to deal with disappointment. She is no longer competing, but during the whole pandemic lockdown, she was on one of the athletic podcasts I was listening to, and just her perspective on life and how do you move forward and how to do things. She still, for me, is a very great inspiration. So Gail to bits. And she's a great commentator on the athletic community as well. But her values and how she operates, just, I think she's a fantastic human being. Michelle Obama is another one. That is, I like Barack, but Michelle Obama is my lady. I'm going to see Barack when it comes to Australia.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
If Michelle was coming, I would pay top dollar. Yeah. Again, I love what she represents, how she's gone. I've read her first book. I'm reading her second book. You know, she's gone from zero. You know, she comes from humble, everyday middle class. You know, she went to Harvard, you know, something I was never able to do. I don't think I'd have the marks to do so. So the whole level of brilliance that she has there to do, two degrees, but just what she represents and, you know, her ethics, how you operate, how you succeed, how you thrive and move forward, that I find is really quite inspiring. So she's another person that I'm, in terms of famous people, I would say is a person I really love to and quite admire.
That's great, man. And being a Spurs fan, I got to ask this question. I know you told me earlier that you're a track and field fan, right? Which obviously Gail Devers falls right within that category. So I have to ask, when the Olympics come around, are you pulling for Australia or are you pulling for Jamaica?
No. I pull for my athletes who I have a whole
slew of athletes individual
that I follow. And so there's a whole slew who I have my favorites. If you're going to talk in terms of Jamaica, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, who is the greatest of all time, is I'm a big, massive fan of hers. But I have a number of athletes from different nations and some of the up-and-coming athletes that are coming up as well. So, for example, Michael Williams from University of Oregon, big fan of him. Abby Steiner, love Abby Steiner. Yeah, big fan. So there's a number of athletes around the globe that I just I watch. Gotcha. I watch quite closely. So I'm a big, big fan of the sport. Love it. Gotcha. I check the website every day. It's one of the first things I do to see what's happening. I've been a subscriber to Track and Field News magazine since 1985. Yeah, so I'm a massive, massive fan. And I have my different athletes who I like, irrespective of their geographies.
Yeah, I dig it. Yeah, it's kind of like me. I love American football. And I have my team, which is the New Orleans Saints. Who that? And after that, it's players. Like, I like certain players in certain positions. Like, you know, the way that they, it's their swag, their style, their finesse, their toughness, their tenacity, their whatever it might be, their attitude about the game, their work ethic. You know, those things really inspire me. Now, you you I want to acknowledge the passing of your mom. I don't want to just skip over that. I want to really acknowledge that. And I know that losing a parent can have a huge impact on you. So with all the people that inspired you and knowing that she inspired you, I would imagine that was probably one of the more challenging times in your life was losing your mom. Can you kind of talk to us about that and how you were able to move through that?
Sure. Look, it was not easy because I was fairly young at the time and my sister was in law school. And so that whole ovarian cancer and it was a very elongated process, you know, in and out of hospitals, the surgeries.
Yeah.
And mom and I had some, you know, serious talks and, you know, she just instilled, you know, a lot of values in me about, you know, what I need to do once she's gone. So it was a very tough time, but it also kind of gave me some perspective around, you know, being determined, working through adversity, also, you know, living a purposeful life, living a good life, being good to people, and going after what I ultimately want to achieve and to just have that drive and determination. And so my path that I've taken in life has been very good. I feel very blessed, but I've always been a little bit of a deviant in terms of, you know, in terms of where to go and travel. You know, Michael's going to Dubai and South America and different parts of the world. In terms of my career path, it's like, no, I don't want to become an exec. Thanks for the offer. I couldn't think of anything worse. No, I'm going to start. And so, you know, some of my friends and family get it. Some are like, you're going to do what? So I've always been a little bit going against the grain, but ultimately I can say, and there have been mishaps and probably things I know I should have done differently, better. But overall, I'm fundamentally happy with how things are going, where things are at. So it was a tough time, but from that, I think determination, hard work, and just giving me a right perspective of how to move forward, those were some positive things that I have gotten. And like awesome. I said, every day I hear mom, I hear Felicity in my head, you know.
Yeah.
So this kind of popped in my head like, well, you know.
What you going to do, Michael?
What are you going to do?
There you go.
Don't swear for anyone. People will disappoint you, even those that you think never would. So there's a lot of words of wisdom from continually every day, various aspects of life, work, personal, where it'll pop up and mom would say, that's right.
That's great, man. That's great. I love it. So, Michael, this has been a great conversation, man. And, you know, I'd love to promote you in some way. You promoted your book a little bit and this is, you know, an opportunity for, you know, anyone who is intrigued by the work that you do, maybe has a small, medium-sized business and wants to strategize with you on how you can help them grow and build systems for themselves to help them scale. How would someone get in contact with you? I know LinkedIn is how you and I connected. That's one way. But is there like social media that you have? Can people follow you? Do you have your community set up yet? Like, how can people get in touch with you?
So great question. So you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm always active there. Lots of content is going there. Also, you can go to my website, listeninnovategrow.com. And in terms of community, yes, I am launching my own community. It's called the Legacy SME B2B Community, aimed at the business owners, CEOs of service-based, small, medium-sized businesses that are seeking to grow and build the growth, impact, and life that they seek through B2B. So that's kicking off shortly. And so for all details, again, you can go to listeninnovategrow.com/legacy. And that's where we're going to be meeting, coming together to educate, empower, and inspire each other through a range of networking, roundtables, training, guest speakers, access to content, access to myself. And we're, you know, for us to, you know, build the businesses and lives and legacy that we ultimately
see. I love it, man. I love it. Is there anything else, Michael, that you want to share? I know, you know, we talked a little bit about your thoughts around young people and inspiring mentorship. I know you're big on mentorship and really creating a space where people can express and have the opportunity to really learn. Right. So if someone wanted to, I mean, and you took your path, right? You went to undergrad, you went to grad school, got your MBA. You know, is there anything else as far as advice that you would offer someone who may want to go into a consulting role or may want to work with businesses in the way that you do? Is there a better track or what learnings or takeaways can you share that would maybe help someone be set up for success in that realm?
Okay. Well, first of all, I would say you need to listen to yourself. You know, what's your laneway? What's your jam? Where are your strengths? What are you really good at and really passionate about? Identify, find, find out what that is, and then start doing some of your research from there. Where can you start to learn more about that space? What sort of skills you're going to need, knowledge and skill, and then try to seek those out. And you can get that through a variety of ways, but really getting clear about yourself, about what you're wanting to do, what you're good at, get clear on that, then start doing some of your research as the skills and knowledge that you need, and then what assistance is available, information assistance available that you can get. Because you are going to need to have your team of mentors, yes, advisors to help you, and start seeking some of that out. So that would be my go-to action points that you want to be doing.
Love it, man. Love it. Yeah, and as a coach, I would say to any young person, if you're in your, you know, finishing high school or going to college, don't rush yourself. Take your time. I know there's a lot of pressure that these young kids having them to choose a career. And you know, I have a degree in journalism and I've never done anything with journalism until now, you know, and it's okay. Take your time. Be clear. And to Michael's point, be clear about what you want to do. And that may take a year, may take 2 years. It's okay. Right. Yeah. And take advantage of your parents. If they let you stay at home until you figure it out. Yeah. You don't be in a rush to get out on your own and go spend money on rent. Stay home, figure it out. As long as you got a path ahead of you and you got a plan, I'm sure your parents will support you if you're in that supportive kind of home. So, Michael, this has been extremely invaluable, man, that you've given. I mean, I couldn't have written a book, you know, on what you provided here in such a short window of time. So thank you so much for coming on to the show and for providing all the introspect, the knowledge, the value that you provided, man. It's been really, really great. And you're welcome to come back anytime.
Thank you so much, Bradford. Great conversation. And thank you for the opportunity. It's been a privilege. It's been an honor. So thank you.
My pleasure, man. I'll see you around LinkedIn.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Take care, man. Have a great day. All right.
This is Doris Brown's baby boy. We out.